Select your program.
Dialogue.
Program initiated.
Approach the threshold. Engage rationality. Open your mind. Godspeed.
Ripping through the blackness of space to your listening devices. This is Flagship Freedom, the podcast that places you on the front line in the war of ideas. This is Michael, and Michael alone. Danny will not be joining us for this particular conversation as he did have a little bit of a work-related emergency, but never fear, he will be back for next episode. For now, what he missed is your gain, because we had Maj Toure on the program from Black Guns Matter. No, not Black Lives Matter. Black Guns Matter. And this is an organization that if you aren't aware of, you have to go and look it up right now because they are doing some wonderful things. This is an organization that is teaching people in urban environments gun safety, conflict resolution, philosophy behind the Second Amendment rights. They're doing all of this stuff and more. The owner and the founder, Maj, has a lot to say on the matter, as you might expect. So we were initially supposed to have a conversation that lasted, 30 minutes, and we doubled that time. Hey, you can't blame me. We have good guests. We just gotta keep him on for as long as we can. So I wanted to thank Maj for being on the program for so long. I think that what he's doing is wonderful, and I think you will too. I think that's all for me, so listen for yourself and enjoy the program. All right, everybody, we have on the line Maj Toure, the founder of Black Guns Matter, an organization that I am getting so much more information about over the last couple months, so much so that I had to bring Maj on to talk about this really unique and interesting organization. He's been on all sorts of programs recently, The Blaze, he's been on NPR, been on Ebony. Maj, welcome to the program.
Well, what's up? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. So let's get right into it. I mean, I am really fascinated by your message, especially because usually what we do is we box people and issues into different categories, and we always have these expectations that people that we meet will fit into, you know, a given stereotype or a given sort of box. And as an individualist like myself, and I'm sure you've looked into the program a little bit earlier, you know, we tend to fall on the staunch individualistic anarchist side of things. So the primacy of one's being is simply the individual. So we really, really push the idea of judging people and ideas based off of specific individual occurrences. And people should be judged on their own merits, on their own ideas. And stereotypes are harmful. And honestly, the kinds of things that you talk about, they're really good ideas. But I want to really start out with the idea of the Second Amendment. And what really that means to you?
Well, for me, the Second Amendment is about the human right to defend yourself with the most in the most proficient way. As far as I'm concerned, until it's laser guns, it's going to be guns, firearms. You know, so yeah. That's the most proficient way to defend, you know, your life. So the Second Amendment holds value in that sense because whatever other belief systems that you have, that's the one that can defend them. So that's the one that if someone doesn't want you to be able to defend your choices, thought patterns, ideologies or whatever, that's the one that would have to be attacked. And in urban areas specifically, we see that getting attacked. So the Second Amendment is about a person, you know, wanting to exercise their human right to defend themselves. And regardless of what, you know, the government or opposition would say, the government is supposed to work for the people. Right now, you know, I say this all of the time, people are getting that backwards. You know, so the Second Amendment for me individually is my ability to exercise a natural right via that Second Amendment and at the same time respecting other people's right to, you know, do the same or not, because that's the beauty of it. You don't have to if you don't want to. But if you do, that amendment is there for you.
So is there ultimately an implication with those that support the Second Amendment that all conflicts must be decided by force?
No, but if force can be used as a deterrent, it never actually has to be used. If I know that you know, I don't know if you're going to shoot a gun or not. If you got one, the chances are that you might. If you don't, I know you can't. You know, so it doesn't have to end in force or violence per se. It's just that we're willing to go to this extent. That's all war really is. It's politics by a different means. All of the other arenas of conversation and diplomacy and tact and politic have fallen or have been exhausted. And the other person is still trying to encroach, you know, your line. So you have to be, it got to be something behind them words at that point, you know, and that's all firearm knowledge and safety is about. You know, you prepare for, you know, you train for peace, you hope for peace, but you train and prepare for war and just be ready, you know, because at a certain point you might have to go to war, you know, and I, you know, they say in the hood, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it, you know, so it doesn't mean it's going to escalate necessarily to force, but, I'm not going to be outgunned or out, no pun intended, by somebody that just doesn't believe in my belief systems and at the same time doesn't want to coexist peacefully. I would like to coexist peacefully with everything, but I understand the reality of the world and some people don't want to coexist peacefully unless you're doing exactly what they want you to do.
Right, right. So when people say, oh man, Maj, you have a really dismal outlook on the world, you know, this is really a pessimistic viewpoint. You got to walk around with a gun at all times in order to protect yourself. I mean, what about rationality and reason and being able to talk things out? I mean, isn't that like the hallmark of an enlightened society?
Yeah, it is. And you can still, I can talk and hash things out and still be strapped. It doesn't mean that I'm going to initially go to lethal force.
Yeah.
You know, law enforcement officers talk things out. Most of them. They do paperwork a lot. They talk things out. They rationally. They try to de-escalate for the most part, de-escalate domestic situations. Hey, man, just take a walk. Hey, young lady, you take a walk. Come back. Cool off. That's de-escalation. But there's something behind that. If you don't, they have a taser. They have a stick. They have a firearm. You know, so... Yeah, these are the highlights of, you know, rational thinking. But everybody that is armed isn't rational. Everyone that isn't armed isn't rational. I choose to cover all as many bases as I can. But it's not. That's where our de-escalation and tactics and conflict resolution components come in for our classes. You know, because these things are lethal and or potentially lethal. And these are last resorts. You know, when you've tried to de-escalate and remove yourself from the situation. But if you can't in that scenario, there need to be something behind them words.
You know, you describe the gun as sort of the most expedient way to end, you know, a conflict. That might not be the right way to end all conflicts. And hopefully we'd be able to end conflicts through just talking it out. But having that as the last word, the ultimatum, the end to be able to protect yourself and your loved ones is a necessary component of a free society. But sometimes people that are staunchly opposed to what you're talking about say that, you know, you guys are just like going over the top. You're fetishizing the Second Amendment and this gun. Isn't that kind of like a twisted thing to do, to fetishize this cold metal object that kills people?
It's not fetishizing when it's balanced and it's related to the world. We're not going to pretend like across globally, historically, from times of antiquity until now, we're not going to pretend like wars didn't exist. We're not going to pretend like swords and bows and arrows at a certain point weren't the height of, you know, self-defense technology.
Yeah.
You know, you have to accept or don't to accept that reality has existed and may continue to exist is not fetishizing it. It becomes fetishizing to me when you can't exercise higher ideals because you have a firearm or it's unbalanced at that point. But to promote, you know, most of the people that I know that are firearms owners are well-versed people. They have to, because it's confusing to even know most laws about firearms in your local area.
Right.
Then you got to deal with the federal situation. So they, in essence, wind up becoming lawyers. Then they think about, okay, I got to get in the gym because you know, I might have this huge belly and my, you know, appendix carry isn't even an option.
Right.
You know what I mean? And even on my hip, I got to lose some weight. So then that person may think, oh, well, how can I become more effective in defending myself along with this firearm? So now they're in the gym. Now they're dealing with, I don't want to, you know, they money got to get right because guns ain't cheap. Real nice guns aren't cheap.
Right.
So they become more well-rounded in the financial areas of their life. They become more economically disciplined. Firearm ownership shapes you into a different person. Even down to, I don't want nobody to get the drop on me, so I have to pay more attention. Their head on a swivel everywhere they go. You know, I don't want to bring unnecessary attention to myself, so I'm going to dress different. It changes your fashion choices. Most of the people that are, again, that are Second Amendment people are very, they become, you know, inadvertently, a lot of times they become extremely well-rounded people. So in no way, shape, or form, generally, in my experience, is that fetishizing, you know, the actual metal object or polymer object.
Yeah.
It creates a space where the other side will say the extreme because the other side would rather just chill and not do anything. And there's nothing wrong with that. They want to feel comfortable. I understand the importance of ignorance being blissful. It's very relaxing. It's very relaxing. In order to be on point, you got to pay attention to a lot of things, and it's easier to not pay attention. So I get it, and I don't disagree with them. That's their personal choice. I'm not going to infringe on their choice to be lazy or not as on point, and they shouldn't infringe on mine. But they make these type of statements to deflect away from them not wanting to be as on point. So they'll name call it, you know, and I'm used to it, you know, but that doesn't mean it's valid. It just means it's something that they could say. And I respect their ability to say it while disagreeing with the premise. And that, in essence, is the height of democracy.
Yeah. You said some really good things there that I certainly relate to. I never really thought about gun ownership really molding me, me being a gun owner myself, molding me and making me a more aware person. But, you know, when, let's say when I was taking my CPL classes and purchasing my firearm, I learned so much and learned so much to, I was so much more cognizant of my surroundings when I was carrying.
Yep.
Because there is a greater expectation, a greater responsibility that you have to place on yourself when you have a tool to end somebody's life.
Yep.
You have to both respect yourself and your training and your mind and your abilities. And also you have to constantly be aware of your surroundings nobody wants to be put in a situation where they're pulling a trigger and ending somebody's life. Even if it was justified, it is an incredibly painful thing to do, and it'll haunt you for the rest of your life. And gun owners, I think responsible gun owners know that.
Yeah.
And that is the last thing that they want to do. Now, so,
and that's why it's always funny when I see people think that. I can tell that person hasn't. It's the equivalent of somebody saying, "Man, why do you go to the gym so much? Man, what is it about the gym?"
Right.
It's because now I'm actually. And being in a gym situation, I know that I can squat 450, 500 pounds, even if it's only one time, right? I know what my legs can do. It's almost unfair for me to get into a fight with somebody. One, my stance is going to be much more solid because I have a stronger center of gravity. Two, if I kick you in your face, I know exactly what could happen to you. So it almost the knowledge makes you understand that this is almost unfair. My wind is better than yours. I have better cardio. I can throw 1-2 punches for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
I connect that punch with you a lot differently than you may think. It is almost unfair for me to allow you to put yourself in a space where you get your ass handed to you. So by and large, I go, it's cool, bro. And I step off. It's very similar with firearms. I know what a 40 cal shell could do to somebody's face. I say this all the time. I know what a 9mm could do to your face. So it's like, you don't even, one, I can tell you don't have a firearm on you, unless you're just great at not printing, but I doubt it, because your attitude would be different.
Yeah.
And even if you do, I've never seen you in any of these gun ranges. And if that's the case, if you can shoot better than me, then cool. Or even if you don't, it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to deal with the legal fees that's going to be involved in this. So again, you win. You actually lost, but you win what you thought you win. So the perceived understanding of control changes. It's so many well-rounded dynamics that are involved at that point that it doesn't even, you almost become Zen. It doesn't even, nothing, it's there's nothing. And if you had the type of training or understanding that I had in life, you wouldn't even be doing what you're doing in the first place. So because of that, I win again. It puts you in a different viewpoint. It's like a boxer. Floyd Mayweather is not getting into a fight with anybody in the street. Legally, my hands are registered weapons. If I hit you, I'm going to get sued and potentially lose my boxing license. Can't fight you. I have security. That's it. I'm rich. I'm not arguing with you. You know, so all of these things come into play and it changes the mentality of the person. I would recommend to a lot of those anti-gun people to just try it. Go through the process and see how it starts to maybe change you. And then you still have the right to say, yeah, that just wasn't for me. But try it. Because right now you're being very biased and non-objective. And it's not that non-objectivity is not going to make you a stronger person, regardless of if you agree or disagree with me, you know?
Right, right. And you hate what you don't know, too. Yeah. So, okay, let's say we buy into your argument right here, but why a black coalition? Why black guns matter? Why not just guns matter? I mean, is the situation in urban areas so dire that we need an organization that is, you know, creating a racial sort of box for the education of guns?
Well, my organization is not about race at all. Hmm. Black is a color. It's not a race or an ethnic background or a nationality. I don't like chrome guns. They're too shiny. Concealment is in sunny days affects that, depending on how you conceal it. I don't like chrome guns. I think polymer guns are cooler. I think black guns are cooler. That's what the organization is about. You know what I mean? When people go, well, what about white guns? Because I've literally had that
conversation. Like, okay.
Okay. Well, you know, it's no such thing as a white gun. But okay. You know what I'm saying? But we're a urban organization that deals with firearm knowledge. I personally think black guns are better in concealment, and I think polymer guns are just better to me. Semi-autos and polymer are just better to me. You know what I mean? I like Glock, so it's black guns matter. I think a lot of people make that misconception. And the media did the same thing with the Black Panther Party. They thought that was, even though it said Black Panther, people were, oh, it's about black people. What they don't know is there were a lot of members of the Black Panther Party for self-defense that were white. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, and a lot of key leaders in the Black Panther Party for self-defense were women. You know, so I think people, by not doing a little bit of research, go, oh, this is about black people. It's not black people's guns matter. It's called black guns matter. Hmm. Now, wherever their perception allowed them or took them and then left them, that's a different thing, and I'm not responsible for that.
But you gotta admit that you are playing off the Black Lives Matter movement with a name like that. I mean, you must get that a lot.
I do get that, and then great. What's good about that is it creates room for the dialogue for me to share with them and say that's not what I said. I mean, words have very specific definitions. It's not kinda. I didn't say black people's guns matter.
Right.
That would be, then I could go, then people would have more of a, they would go, well, gosh darn it, why is it just black people's guns? And I would go, well, and I would have a reason for that. But that's not what it says. It's not what it says. It says black guns matter. And it's the reality of the situation, you know? So, but it's great that it creates that type of conversation for people to be, when we're walking around with the sweatshirts and the hoodies or whatever, and for people to go, what you mean by that? That's what we need. We need people to have those conversations again. The person that's wearing a shirt or that's a member needs to be well-versed so they can articulate that position very smoothly without offending the listener. I mean, to the best of your ability, because you can't be responsible up until a certain point. Hmm. And then that person that's asking a question needs to be asking from a genuine place of wanting to learn, not from a place of, I just want to chop your head off because I already disagree and I'm biased. You know, when one's open to share and one's open to receive, that's how we get growth. So I love it.
So already, you know, you're breaking down a lot of the misconceptions, the sort of superficial misconceptions that somebody might have about your organization. You have an organization where people, they make the snap judgment that this is what it automatically means, yep. And then they dig a little bit deeper and they realize that it's absolutely not the case.
Right.
Now, I want to dig a little deeper into that. There must be a lot of people that, you know, you engage with that are immediately, they've immediately stereotyped you and your views, and A, they do one of two things. Perhaps they've already heard of you, and now they've placed you in a separate box. Okay, gun owner, but he's a black gun owner, and he's a black legal gun owner, and he's educating all these people, you know, to have firearms. So he must be right wing. He must be a Republican. And okay, they've placed you in that box. And then there are other people that may not have met you. And they talk about, oh, you know, what do you think about, you know, these, you know, Philando Castillo and Michael Brown and Freddie Gray and Walter Scott? Aren't those things really bad? Immediately placed into these two dichotomous positions, which I suspect you aren't really falling into. I think that you have a rather unique set of opinions that don't really fall into either one. So how do you handle that sort of, you're typecasted, and is it just a matter of educating people?
Yeah, I stay out of all of those boxes by being comfortable with being in all of those boxes.
Mm.
I can go in. If you're really cool, you can go into a fire and come out cool. I'm not trapped by any of these boxes, so I pick whichever one is necessary for the forward movement of the human race. If you humans need to initially communicate this way, okay, you're Christian? Okay, cool. We'll talk to you in Jesus parables. Fine. If you're Muslim, I'll say assalamu alaikum to you. And you'll say peace be upon to you too, back. You know, if you're a yogi, a practicing yogi, we'll have conversations on a yoga mat while we got some Nag Champa burning. I'm not trapped by any of these boxes, none of them. The well-rounded person is respectable enough of each person's box that they choose for themselves to dialogue with them in their box and try to show them a different box. And if they want to go into that different box at a different point, they're welcome to it. But I don't care if they don't or not. I just know that I'm being respectful of the, I take my feet off when I go into somebody, my shoes off when I go into somebody's mental home. And I respect their space. So that's that. As far as I don't believe that any of these, I don't really care about the boxes. I care that you care. And in order to meet you where you're at, I respect your space. As far as people making that decision and saying you're in one of these boxes, they do that until they talk to me. I can have a conversation about anything. I had a conversation a few days ago about quantum physics and the Planck scale. I'm a high school dropout. You cannot trap me by any of these things. By any of these things. At a certain point, the quicker these people, when we communicate, they recognize that I'm beyond their present understanding. The quicker they respect that, they can learn from, and I can share, you know, they can share with me and I can share with them. We can learn from each other. But upon first glance, even, you can't tell what I am. Is he hood? Is he Jamaican? Is he Muslim? Is he, what is he? He's got a beard like one of those Taliban guys, which is what I've heard. He's got locks like a Rastafarian. Is he Bob Marley? Does he smoke? Does he not? The beauty of that is I know that it has very little to do with me. Those preconceived notions were there before you even heard of me. And it doesn't matter what I am. Am I single? Does he have children? Does he actually shoot? Does he not shoot? Is he a bad guy? Is he a good guy? None of that shit matters. None of it. And I don't get caught in the hype of it. None of that matters. What matters is I've appeared to give people information about helping them evolve. And we just starting at the Second Amendment. That's it. Everything else is just some stuff that you, barriers that you're creating or breaking for yourself. And my job is to assist you in breaking some of those and showing you different boxes until you get out of the box, until you accept that it ain't no spoon. All of the other stuff is nothing. It's nothing. My individual, what I feel like, that's why I'm not offended by their placing of the boxes. Because the boxes, if you're thinking about what box I'm in, I don't care about even me in that level. I don't care to defend myself. I don't care to argue my position. I don't care because it's more about you than me. So that's how I'm able to win.
At what point do you decide, okay, this is just not worth my time to continue this conversation? This is an audience that just doesn't want to hear my message. Or maybe they just aren't willing to take me as the messenger.
Either way, it doesn't matter because the information's already in there. You can't rewrap that. It's like trying to rewrap a present. It doesn't matter how meticulous you are and you rip the paper. You put tape on the paper. It's not the same wrapper anymore. Even if you peel that tape microscopically, there's fibers of that paper under that tape that wasn't on that other part. It's unwrapped. And what was the other question that you said?
I was asking, they might either deny the message, or when do you just give up, or when do you just walk away when somebody rejects your message? Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's a family member that you truly love. You know, when do you decide, okay, I'm just going to give this person space, or this person is just untenable. I just can't get the message across to them.
The message is already there. It's just at that point, I'm humble enough to know that you don't do everything. You just plant the seed. Just, I don't care when. You might have the best soil, the best seeds, the best water. You put it in the ground. You have to wait until spring, until that germinates. I don't care what you thought. You have to wait until spring. You can get as mad as you want. My job is in the conversation. I don't need you to acknowledge that this makes sense. I know it makes sense. I suffer from no levels of insecurity. I don't need approval. I don't need approval. So I know that this is going to change your mind, help you grow in the season for it. So when that happens, I go, okay, well, when you're ready. And it's never a lost cause. It's there. It's there. It's in your mind. And you may agree with me totally. Your false ego might make you deny it. That has nothing to do with me either. The mission has been accomplished. I've practiced inception. It's in there. It's going to grow. It's nothing to do with me at that point. It got more to do with the ether or Ra or something. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's switch topics to a little bit about, you know, what you teach in your organization in terms of the whole philosophy of de-escalation and resolution disputes and all this sort of stuff. And we actually had a fella named Dale Brown. I'm not sure if you've heard of this fella. He's from Threat Management Center in Detroit. He's a guy who's been around business for about 20 years, and he is a private citizen. What he does is he provides security for businesses and neighborhoods and individuals, and not once in his 20 years of working has he ever had a court date. He's never had somebody injured under his protection. None of his employees have been killed. And the man he loves guns. Mm-hmm. He's a big gun fanatic. He'll say that as much. But he says that the police, they're not doing it right. They are not trained in. They're trained in a different way to essentially end conflict. Not so much are they trained to create an environment of, let's say, of safety, an environment of community, so much as they are trained to end conflict once they're called, once they're called, they're basically law enforcement, precisely. So they aren't really doing the community's job of making things safer. So that he says that the police have a role, but the community could have a more important and much more fundamental role to make things a lot more safe. So you guys must be preaching a de-escalation method too, and I want to hear a little bit about your philosophy there.
Well, the police come after the fact. They come, right. They come to clean things up. You know what I'm saying? And I personally believe we call the police too much. If it's a cat in the tree, you call the police. If it's a fire, you're still hitting the same 911 number. Police are going to come. If it's an ambulance, police, police, police. Start doing some stuff yourself. Like, why are you calling police all of the time for? Just handle life. Handle life. I mean, we're the same group of people that built entire nations. You go further, we're the same, humans. Like, we kind of built bridges, literally. Like, the Philadelphia Ben Franklin Bridge is huge. I drive under there a lot. And I'm always amazed that, like, yo, humans did this. Like, the stones are huge. But you still, you're from the same DNA that did those these great things, but you can't manage without calling 911. That's a fall from grace if I've ever heard one. You know, so yes, I do think that they're trained in a different manner. It's not about, it's about revenue generating for the state, to be perfectly honest. It's not about, I mean, community and protecting and serving. It's not about that. It's not about that. I mean, it's a statute. It is not the police's responsibility, United States Supreme Court. It's not their responsibility to protect you. So why are you calling? Or why are you calling them to protect you when you should protect yourself? And if there's an issue to get them to file a report, that's what you should call them for after you've handled your situation. But we on that microwave thing. We want everything done for us when we could get far more out of life by doing more things for ourselves. You know, that's welfare. That's exactly what that is. That's welfare. You're depending on something else to handle something that you feel like you can't handle yourself. When in all actuality, for hundreds and thousands of years before these things existed, you did. We did, you know. So their training is bad. I mean, by and large, I think that there's officers that put that uniform on that have a genuine, they want to do it. And I, you know, but just like a teacher who goes into a public school that has a, I want to help, they're still limited by their curriculum and the political and social powers that be that have created this curriculum with a purpose. So how many times have we heard of, you know, teachers who want to do more, but the curriculum and the plan says you can only do this, that, and the third, or the budget. I want to take out my students to go here, here, and here. Oh, well, we don't have money allocated for that in the budget. Eye-opening, mind-expanding trips that could actually inform and shape these powerful minds into even greater minds, limited by something as simple as red tape. Same thing with law enforcement, you know? So there's guys that I know want to do that, and then they've become hamstring. They feel like they're getting unnecessarily singled out because they're trying to, instead of arrest people and give them tickets, they're actually trying to de-escalate. Well, you didn't meet your ticket quota or whatever. You know what I'm saying? You're not doing the job. Oh, so the job is this. The job isn't actually stopping some of the stuff and community policing and being a peace officer anymore. You know, and I think, you know, I think those men and women need to look in the mirror and see, what was my reason for taking this job? Was it just 30, 40,000 a year and a lot of benefits and some cool on the side perks? And I look cool in this uniform? Or did you come there to actually make the communities better? Do you even police the communities that you live in? If you want to do the most work, why not do that where you actually live, where you can actually develop a relationship with the community? You already have one, you know? So all of these things are key components, and this is how we have to train ourselves to get out, ask those questions, to get outside of that matrix. Why aren't these things this way? Because this job has been corrupted to a point where it's about generating revenue.
You bring a neophyte into your organization. What are you teaching him? What are the fundamental things? I, you know, you're talking about self-reliance. You're talking about not fearing the gun, using it as a tool of self-defense. Give me sort of a rundown of the things that you're teaching in your program.
Philosophically, we deal with how the Second Amendment, and culturally, how the Second Amendment is very important and powerful for urban communities because it's marketed differently in urban communities, regardless of race. Firearms anatomy. You need to know basic firearm safety. You need to know the difference between a handgun and a long gun. You need to know how that firearm actually works. Basics. You also need to know the laws of your land. And we link people with reputable trainers, instructors, and lawyers in their neighborhood that they can foster that and grow that relationship with. So in the long and short of it, what we're doing is we're conduit. We're generating energy and putting people with people and helping them to ensure that relationship grows, and then they become politically, socially, and financially active to make the community better. And it's no magic. It's just us doing work.
Hmm. Yeah, I like
guess
that
could be magical as I think about it. Doing can be magical. Or magical.
That's quite good. That's very good. You got to get some posters there. we got some listeners that are graphic designers. Maybe they'll get on the ball there. Okay, I want to tug at a thread that you just brought up. You said that the Second Amendment is packaged differently in urban environments. How do people interpret it before they come there? They hear the Second Amendment. What do they think?
You know, crazy white guys with Confederate flags and pickup trucks.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because in order to control people, you got to keep them isolated and separated. Hmm. You know what I mean? Especially if they outnumber you. You know, so in order to do that, you got to like make it seem like, oh, yeah, you know, those guys are crazy. They don't want you over there. And if you are a part of that, you must be OK with that. And that's you're going to turn into that. Hmm. And they tell those, you know, southern white guys, yeah, those urban people, they're crazy. You don't want to be, you know, just running around with your gun in your hand, pointing it sideways. And if you start interacting with them, you're going to turn into that. And that's how they keep people separated. But I'm from urban environments. It's not my primary responsibility to go into other places before I deal with urban areas, you know. So, and by doing that, because it's so many, the populations are so large in urban areas, you can affect more change quicker. Because the message starts to spread like wildfire. Like you said, I'm popping up. People are atting you here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because the concentration is urban areas. I know why they told urban areas that they managed it to, you know, brand it differently for urban areas because of the population. New York City got 7-8 million people at any given time. Hmm. Of course you can't have 7-8 million socially conscious, responsible, firearm-owning citizens there and control them. Hell no. Convince them that guns are bad. 7-8 million people in one city. Convince Chicago that it's bad. Convince this. Convince that. Then things can happen because of the ignorance. Then we can enact more legislation to further remove the citizens' rights away from them. Because we're gonna get them to co-sign their own slavery. I can see it very easily. It's not hard to see it. I see what they did. They're very meticulous. They're very smart.
Who is they? Who is they? Who are these? You make it seem like it's a concerted effort. Where is this coming from?
It is a concerted effort. Anything that happens this effectively and scientifically is not a oops. The sun revolves, you know, is the earth revolves around the sun every day the same way. If not, it's disastrous effects. That's not an accident. That's a highly organized phenomenon. So when you're talking about situations like, okay, let's take it back to the 60s. When you're talking about the Mulford Act, that was highly organized. That was Mulford. That was Reagan. That was the California legislation agreeing to that. Now it had disastrous effects. So now California is damn near gunless. You know, yeah. When you have places like, you know, the draconian or the Rockefeller laws designed around drugs, that's a concerted effort of politicians. You know, when you tie that into, you know, the prison industrial complex, the Bob Barker company and all these other different things, it's not an accident. It's not an oops. It's politicians, big business, you know, and them using lower tier politicians and smaller businesses to get things done in a manner that tries to remove the power away from the people and keep it in the hands of the corporation. Not every corporation, but I mean, look at it. These politicians jump from public service to private companies like it's a damn revolving door. It's not an accident. It's part of the plan. It's part of a plan. I'm not knocking it. I'm saying, look, everybody, pay attention to this plan. I'm saying, look at it. Now, if this information is exposed and if you want to do something about it, this is how we can use public and private sectors for our benefit, the people, just like they're doing. We have more power if we're more organized. And then they can't do what they're doing to the extent that it affects you and your human rights because you're aware. You're blocking it, and you're going on offense as opposed to being trapped on defense.
Now, are there any organizations in particular that you find that are extremely detrimental to what you are doing?
No.
Like specific organizations?
No. No one's going to stop us. No one can stop us. We're going to win. There's nobody that they're afraid of us. They should be. I have too much information, and too many people is down with what we're doing in a short period of time. The best thing that they should do is stay out of our way and get all of the money that they can while they can get it. That's what I would recommend. Other than that, what are you going to do? You're going to do nothing. You're going to do nothing. What you can do is milk the cow that you've been milking. dry. Because pretty soon no one's going over there anymore. And it doesn't have to be violent. It doesn't have to be this rowdy, rah, rah, rah. I'm not into that. I'm not into that. It's just strategic moving and information and logical application of the information. That's it. And people are going to make their own decisions. All I'm doing is showing people, hey, you got duped here, here, and here. I didn't do it. These people right here did it. But they don't have to dupe you anymore if you could do this, this, and this. And these are the people that are in support of you doing this, this, and this, so you're not duped anymore. That's it. Everything else is, I'm not about a rowdy yelling at people and name calling. That's game. I'm not doing that because that's not how they operate. They in the flyest suits. They on yachts. They on a golf course. Ironically, they're on, you know, the gun range making these deals that are in opposition to the people, or not necessarily in opposition per se, but just in opposition of some of our freedoms, you know, and you agreed because you didn't say no. So now I'm just giving you the information to say no and build your own thing that, you know, just build a replacement. That's all. That's not negative. That's still good for business. That's still good for the economy. That's still good for American people. That's still good for every single thing that we want out of life. The internet ain't going to stop because we are exposing this information. We're going to create more jobs. In reality, and there's no threat to this matrix. It's a threat to small amounts of people that were tricking people within that matrix. So that's it.
Those are some powerful words, and I'm not going to pretend like I want to add anything else to that. I want to move to some of these short one-liner questions right here that I got from some of the listeners, and I actually added some myself. You can respond with some short soundbite answers, or you can exposit just a little bit further. So why a gun over a taser? Why lethal over non-lethal?
Because the other person may not be as respectful to have a taser too.
I mean, taser's going to stop somebody, right?
It can, but in a life or death, I only pull my firearm. I wouldn't pull a taser. If you can pull a taser, you could probably walk away. It's not life or death. You know what I'm saying? So I would only pull a firearm when it's a life or death situation. If it's something to a point of a taser, it's probably not as deep. And I could fight. So if it's not that deep and it's a fight, then we're going to fight. You know what I mean? But a taser, nah, I don't. There's cliches for things like this, but the cliches make a lot of sense. Never bring a knife to a gunfight.
Yep.
A taser is like, kind of like a knife. So,
yeah, we've heard that. In fact, one of the questions was, why not a knife? Because you've probably heard this before, but there's a bunch of different FBI and police studies where they show the average reaction time of even a cop. You know, 1.5 seconds is sufficient time for somebody to attack you within something like 7 or 10 meters. Yeah. So they can close the gap of what, 20? It's like 20 some feet,
right?
Within
1.5.
You know, right? Yeah. So they got a knife, you bring a gun, and most of the conflicts do happen to fall somewhere between, what, 20 and 10 feet, something like that?
My thing is this. A firearm is also a deterrent.
Yeah.
You know that I have a firearm and I'm trained and I'm legal. A lot of the dumb stuff ain't even going to come my way. It's a deterrent. You're not running up and smacking the hell out of law enforcement officers, even if you wanted to, because he's got a gun. That's the reality. It's the most effective way of self-defense, not a knife. So that, for me, that's why a firearm over a taser or a knife.
Got it. What do you think about open carry?
I don't do it. I don't advocate it unless it's in a political sense where there's plenty of cameras, there's press, and it's the open carry cookout that is a political statement to let people know, hey, we have the right to do this, and it's to make it less taboo. When there's children around playing, there's plenty of cameras, and people can start to see, oh, it's amazingly, no one got shot at that open carry thing. But as far as an individual, me personally, I believe that concealed is concealed. I don't even tell people what I ate that day a lot of times. I might post it on Instagram, but if you ask me, unless you ask me, I'm generally not offering information, and I have the right to that privacy. That doesn't mean I'm doing anything wrong. It just means I just kind of didn't want to talk about that, you know? So
to play devil's advocate, I mean, if you're using a gun as a deterrent, wouldn't it be more of a deterrent if you just wore it on your hip rather than conceal it?
Yes and no. If I was law enforcement, I would totally agree with that. But the perceptions that we're dealing with, the way that I'm dressed and how I look, people will probably do one of two things. One, go, he must be a cop. Or two, let me see if I can snatch it off of him.
Hmm.
And I've seen it a lot of times. Dudes try to snatch the gun and run. I see it. So me and the people that don't go, let me snatch it or he's a cop, get nervous. And the position that I'm in is to get people that may be on the fence onto thinking about firearm safety and knowledge. But if I'm scaring them all over the place because of their misconception, it makes my job in that lane a lot more difficult. So for me, nope.
So how about this right here? Wouldn't an increase in gun ownership of the black community just lead to more unjustifiable homicides? You know, you got like Livonia, what's his name? He was shot in his bed because the cops sent a SWAT team in. He was laying in his bed. They thought he was making a move. They thought he had a gun because somebody said through the grapevine to the cops that he had a gun. There was no gun in the home. He got shot. He had a gram of marijuana, a couple grams of marijuana. That's it. That's what he got shot for. So if all of a sudden a bunch of cops suspect that there's, you know, a massive increase of black people owning guns, isn't it going to lead to more homicides by cops?
No, it's not. And any officer, by officer specifically, any officer that thinks because more citizens from any background racially, they feel like they have to be more nervous, that officer should look in the mirror and see if they're racist or not and ask themselves that question. Citizens have a right to have firearms. Officers need to have better training. Those type of officers need to have better training in accepting that fact, that legal fact. So an officer that would say, oh, I feared for my life, fear of does not absolve you of a homicide. As a licensed carrier, if someone shoots someone, kills them, and can't prove that it was beyond the shadow of a doubt, lethal force was justified, you're going to jail. And officers that do that should be held to that same standard. So no, I don't believe in it could lead to more officers. No, if we're trained and we're, you know, communicating with the officers. How you doing, officer? I am a licensed to carry. How would you like me to proceed? And if an officer gets nervous, and that's manslaughter at worst, homicide at best, you know. So that's that. As far as it'll make you more likely in your neighborhood to become, two things to that. One, Bill Burr did a joke where he said, you know, if I get a pool in my backyard, it does increase the chances of me drowning because there wasn't a pool. And now there's a pool. But we have these things like pool covers, it's kind of got to be responsible with your pool. Similar. The other thing to that is, when people make those statements, they're attributing human characteristics to an inanimate object. And it's actually extremely racist because you're saying that because this person is of a more melanated content of the human race, that somehow they are not going to be able to read a book that comes with their firearm, to take firearm safety training. And as soon as you get the gun in your hand, you're going to have a genetic predisposition to kill yourself or kill people that look exactly like you. That is the most racist bullshit ever. And this is the type of thing that the marketing and the branding has been presented to people of urban backgrounds. Oh, more such and such. What kills people is ignorance with tools. That's it. You know, so no, those people that make those statements clearly are operating out of a preconceived notion based on some misinformation, or haven't just did the knowledge or the facts of the matter. So we open our classes up to them too, so they can see, wow, this Glock actually has a bunch of internal safes on it. I could literally drop this off of the top of the roof of my car and it would not misfire. Wow, this is what this actually does. Wow. I didn't know that this had this. So a lot of times they just repeat in the script they heard from somewhere else without doing the actual knowledge of it. We got to make ourselves available to them to at least give them the information. So if they want to continue making themselves look stupid, they can. But if they want to have things that they don't have to look stupid anymore, they can have them.
Maj, what is the best argument you have heard against your position of owning a gun?
The best one?
Yeah.
They're all really stupid. but the best one is probably the whole that whole you increase your chances, because they can tie that into urban crime stats. Never accounting for the level of ignorance, never associating the fact that most of these homicides are happening in areas where there's already a gang of gun control laws. That being totally left out of the fact. Never dealing with the fact that these are in places where gun shops and gun ranges where people could actually learn to have respect for the tool. You know, I was just in Detroit. There's literally not one gun shop in the city of Detroit.
That's right. Yeah, you got to go 20 minutes out of the city.
So with that being the case, they conveniently say these things. And if I wasn't smarter, I would fall victim to it. So that's what makes it the best argument against my thing that I've seen. But it's just it crumbles under the weight of the understanding of social conditions, the understanding of the environment, the understanding of what ignorance and miseducation does. Then you paint, you put that thing in context and you go, oh, well, that isn't the same then. But that's one of their better ones, though, because they can use just those stats minus the context to try to strengthen their argument. So that's kind of one of the better ones.
Yeah. And like you said, most of the ones I've heard are pretty much garbage.
Right.
So, all right. So what about background checks? What are your thoughts on those?
I think we have them already. It's a 4473, which is a federal form every time you make a legal firearm purchase, whether that's at a gun store or a gun shop or a gun show. All of those, you got to fill out a 4473, which is NICS, National Instant Criminal, you know, Systems. That's a background check. It happens. We have them. You either get a yes, a no, or a hold up. There's already laws in place. There's already background checks. What other background check are people? Oh, we want a universal. You already have one. That's a federal form when you fill out that 4473. And then a lot of the states do a state check in addition to. So You have background checks. What else? Is there a place that I can go without wasting 20 minutes and getting another background check? Please, somebody point it out to me, because that's where I'm going to go to buy my guns from now on, because I know that I'm a responsible gun owner. You know what I'm saying? So those people that say those things, they say those are the same people that say the loophole. That's just not true. It's just factually inaccurate. If you are doing a legal firearm purchase from a FFL, Federal Firearms Licensee, you are filling out a 4473. If you buy it online, they're going to ship it to a local FFL. You're going to fill out that 4473. There's background checks.
Awesome. All right. We got one.
Like in that moment, I wanted to feel like Forrest Gump. I wanted to say, and that's all I have to say about that.
Hey, you just did.
Right.
All right. So we got one last one. All right. So Maj, I have a feeling that if people walked into your class, a forced personality like yours, they're probably not forgetting a whole lot. But if they did forget everything except for just one thing that you taught in your class, what would you want that thing to be that they remember, that they walk away with, they take home, and they spread?
Get firearm training and don't be a sheep. Get the knowledge.
Awesome.
The knowledge. If you forget everything that I say, somehow remember to get the knowledge. Then make assessments based on factual positions, not what you heard. There's a level of objectivity that needs to be present in all thought-making processes, but especially something as simple, as serious as the Second Amendment, because it's the one thing that can defend all of the other things. So if you forget everything else, the thing that I would stress is get knowledge about firearms safety and training.
Fantastic. And with those words, I gotta ask two things. Where can we get those badass shirts that you are wearing in your pictures all the time? Oh my gosh. I feel like if I walk down the street with one of those, I'm going to be the coolest cat on that street. So I got to buy myself one of those. I know the listeners are going to want to do that too. And also, where can we find your writing, more about you and more about your organization?
Most people can get us on our YouTube. We got a lot of content. A lot of the questions that people want to know are answered there. Everybody should subscribe. It's youtube.com/blackgunsmatter. My social media is at Maj2Re. That's on Instagram and Twitter. Our Black Guns Matter Twitter is Black Guns Matter, but it's BLKGUNSMATTR. And if you need, you know, when you follow me on the other stuff, I'll send you links. But The hoodies can be, they're at bigcartel.com/blackgunsmatter. You can get all of that stuff from my social media. The GoFundMe page, gofundme.com/blackgunsmatter. Support if you can. And just hit me up. If you got questions, if you want to talk, you know, we got a Skype. It's Black Guns Matter. It goes right to my phone. You can, if you want to talk about something, just hit me up. It's me. And that's it. Just if the point of me in social media is to actually be social. I talk to people directly. You know what I'm saying? It's getting a little bit more difficult because, my followers are getting a little bit larger. But I'm still going to try everything that I could do to try to respond to everybody. But anybody that's listening, if you want to hit up, you know, any of those locations, hit me up.
Well, with that, Maj, I got to say, fantastic conversation. Really enjoyed it. And I think the listeners are going to walk away with quite a bit. And I know I will. So thank you so much for joining us on the Flagship Freedom. And we'll have all of those links, including a link to those awesome shirts in the show notes. But for now, everybody, remember that this is Flagship Freedom, the podcast that places you on the front line in the war of ideas. So long until the next battle. Maj, thanks once again.
Thanks, man. Peace.
Nobody else ain't gonna do.